Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophonous cavalcade of conversation. Thanks for being here to join the conversation for the next 4 hours. We got a bone to pick or two, more than one, I guess. There is a feast on our plates, scrumptious helpings of delicacies to tempt our palates. There's kind of a distinct smell in the air, isn't there? It's both delicate and unmistakable. Did you catch a whiff of that? It's not quite the smell of napalm in the morning. It's not acrid, smoky molecules of gunpowder. It's well, whatever it is, it has the inescapable aroma of revolution. This is one genie that's not going to be stuffed back into the bottle, not after the events of this weekend. Seems like every time I return to Coast, this show, after being away for a couple of weeks, I say something along the lines of, wow, sure is a lot of UFO news to digest. And it seems like every month of 2021 has brought more revelations, more media coverage and sources, and other people stepping forward to reveal things more than we've seen before. And we've seen a heck of a lot since 2017 when things kind of turned around on this subject. As I've said before, I never thought I would live to see this kind of a turnaround when it comes to UFOs, media coverage, government agencies actually answering questions, military and other witnesses coming forward to tell what they know. The laughter subsiding. Even though we have a long way to go, I think, on all those counts, a long way to go, but we've come a long way. Earlier tonight, the venerable news program 60 Minutes, for the first time ever, tackled a straight-ahead story about UFOs. And the general subject, I think, has been mentioned in passing a few times before on that show, once in a profile of Robert Bigelow, where he was asked about ET life, and once in a story about Area 51, but never head on. Did you see the report tonight? Bill Whitaker, a Peabody winner, a great reporter. He's the correspondent on this. Graham Messick was the producer. They covered stories and personalities that are, of course, familiar to many of us here. Lou Elizondo and Chris Mellon, both of whom have been our guests on this program. Dave Fravor and the other aviators involved in the Tic Tac incident, one of whom we'd never seen her face or heard her name before, the Nimitz incident. We saw familiar images, the gimbal, the Go Fast, the Tic Tac. We saw Jeremy Corbell's green flying pyramids. We saw photos and videos of unknown objects that you might recall we revealed here to the world just 5 or 6 weeks ago. No one was laughing. No one was snickering. No anchors were on the set queuing up the X-Files theme. No jokes about E.T., the movie, somebody phone home, any of that stuff. Just right down the middle, what 60 Minutes is known to do. And even though it was familiar ground for many of us, for millions of others who watched that program tonight, this was new. And it was being presented by 60 Minutes, which is still trusted, unlike a lot of media outlets these days. 60 Minutes is generally trusted. And in my view, this was a really big deal. You know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the New Yorker, great publications who have tackled this topic, some only very recently. Well, when I read those publications on a regular basis, I always come away with something good. But millions of Americans do not read those publications. They watch TV, and they always watch 60 Minutes, and they trust that program to deliver. And tonight, 60 Minutes did. And I think it's a very positive thing. It paves the way for more media scrutiny, more digging by other news outlets who maybe have been on the sidelines wondering whether they should jump into this topic, into the deep end of the pool, do some follow-up stories maybe, by news teams, local and national. Hopefully, though, 60 Minutes itself now has UFO fever. They are welcome to come dig a burrow right next to the rest of us who've been living down here in the UFO rabbit hole for a long time, and I hope they take it up on the opportunity to do that. I've had some contact with their production team over the last couple of months. I know this has been a tough story to sell, to convince the higher-ups that it's okay to pursue UFOs as a legit news story, and maybe even to convince Bill Whitaker himself that this is legit and needs to be covered because it's important. The producer, Graham Messick, likely had to fight tooth and nail to make this happen, to get it on the air. But here we are. And I hope the already big ratings that 60 Minutes is known to have really spikes for them tonight, that they stay after it, because there's so much more to the story. As I've been watching social media comments tonight, why didn't they do this? Why didn't he cover that? Well, yeah, it's one story. It's 12 minutes. But that's a lot of airtime for a TV story, but not a lot for this particular topic. So there's more to come, I hope. It's a big night, I think. And while I'll bet those debunkers, the critics, are out there licking their wounds and sharpening their knives, ready to attack in the days ahead, it's too late, man. It's too late. This horse is not heading back to the barn. This cat won't be jammed back into the bag. What other animal metaphors can I use? Anyway, it's a good day, I'd say. But there was other UFO news this weekend, too, kind of set the template for what was to come. Did you see the USS Omaha footage? That weird sphere that followed the ship for an hour, sitting right there alongside of it, cruising through the Pacific Ocean there off the coast of San Diego, right there in plain view for an hour. It's of unknown origin. It had no wings, no rotors, no exhaust, no obvious means of propulsion. And then after an hour of just sitting there letting them take pictures, it seemingly vanished into the ocean. What you would call a transmedium vehicle, if that is what happened. Poof, it's gone. Vanished off all the sensors, including the thermal images that the FLIR device that the crew had watched it on for an hour. At one point, this same ship, the USS Omaha, was surrounded by 14 of these things. 14 of them. And there was sort of a cat and mouse game that was going on, popping off and on their radar screens, in and out of reality, in a sense. It happened to multiple other ships, too, in that same vicinity, that same part of the Pacific, on the very same days. For 3-4 days, over and over again, it happened. Different objects doing the same sort of things, popping on and off the screens, just kind of playing games. Are they foreign drones? Something from China, Russia? Well, maybe. But if so, then we really have a problem, because those objects could do things that we can't do. We don't have drones that can do that. So if China or Russia has made some kind of a breakthrough and we don't know about it, it creates all kinds of problems. It would represent, in the words of one intelligence official, a massive intelligence failure on the part of the U.S. military intelligence agencies. Is that really what explains it, though? I have my doubts. I produced a news story about this USS Omaha incident on Friday, and it went all over the world, international coverage, because of the key video that was in this story, obtained by our friend and colleague Jeremy Corbell, who was with us last month. And I can say with absolute certainty that there is more to come, both about the Omaha and other incidents in that same area, and maybe something coming sooner than you might think, other images that might shed light on what is happening, what is unfolding here. I do want to hear from you about these and other developments tonight, recent news. 60 Minutes, the Omaha incident, I want to hear your thoughts about it. We have two great guests for this, too, both veterans of the UFO wars who can give us their take as well. In this hour, Cheryl Costa joins us with an astonishing bit of scholarship on her part. She has put together a compendium, call it the Encyclopedia Ufologica, if you want. Cheryl and I have spoken several times over the years. She's been my guest on this program. She previously compiled the UFO Sightings Desk Reference with cases and data broken down into a whole bunch of categories, state by state, city by city, county by county, a breakdown of who is seeing what in the skies. She and her writing partner have taken it even further, this time with a complete statistical history of UFO sightings in North America dating back two decades. Maybe you're wondering how many, what kind of UFOs get seen where you live. Well, we're going to give you a chance to ask Cheryl about that as we take a dive into her latest massive and massively important masterwork, coming up in just a couple of minutes. Then in the second half, our friend Nick Redfern, who's written dozens of books about UFOs, UFO cases, paranormal mysteries, and related phenomena, takes us on what might be his most difficult and longest-lasting investigation, focusing on hidden agendas, dark secrets, sex, booze, murder, and UFOs. It's the story of Marilyn Monroe, her death, and the rumor that won't die, that Marilyn Monroe didn't commit suicide or have an accidental overdose, that she was murdered to keep quiet about what she knew, what had been whispered to her during pillow talk with some very powerful people, including two very famous brothers. Nick's book about Marilyn and her secret diary is a page-turner, and he joins me later. We want to ask him, too, about these recent developments here in UFO world. So, a lot of ground to cover, as always. Webmaster Lex and I have pulled together our usual assortment of items and oddities culled from various news media around the world. We call it Naps News. You can find it on the Coast to Coast AM website. Among the stories in our collection tonight, there's a fun piece from The New Yorker. What the heck are they feeding these New Yorker writers these days anyway? This story asks a provocative question. Is Mars ours? Do we humans own it? And if so, which humans own it? It's a fun read from a great magazine. I mentioned the USS Omaha case, this amazing video that Jeremy found. We include the first news story about that incident and the video that Jeremy uncorked. It's from our Mystery Wire site. We have a piece about how advanced ET life might have evolved, might still be evolving. Maybe it's along the same lines as humans have evolved. A good story. Another story about a tiny little dinosaur that looked like baby owls, cute little baby owls. But this is not a baby owl to be messed with. Those stories and more in Naps News. While you're on the Coast website, check out how to become a Coast Insider. The cost is 15 cents a day if you subscribe for a year. Gives you access to a vast archive of programs and interviews, including the Art Bell Vault, all of them classics. You know, it'd be kind of cool to hear from Art about all that's unfolding around us right now. I'm sure he'd get a kick out of it. I'd like to hear George Norrie's take on this as well. You can subscribe to George's TV show, Beyond Belief, which covers guests and topics similar to what we do here on the radio. That link is there on the Coast site. With that, let's assume the position. Bring in the dog and the cat and the chicken and the porcupine. Put on a pot of Joe, slide your bod into those almost summer jammies and your toes into the bunny slippers, plop yourself down in a comfy spot, turn down the lights, and turn up the radio because we're about ready to rumble. In a moment, Cheryl Costa and her new masterwork, the UFO Desk Reference 2001 to 2020. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. You know, millions of people around the world, and especially here in North America, are only recently tuning into the UFO mystery. You know, many of them for the first time. It's always been out there hovering, something they really didn't give much thought to. But in part, that's because there's been so much media coverage on a level I think is probably unseen since maybe the first great UFO waves of the 50s and 60s. You know, people are trying to get their heads around this subject that Coast listeners, you know, feel free to give yourselves a little pat on the back, by the way, for being ahead of the curve, that Coast listeners have pondered and grappled with for a long time. What the new arrivals need, though, is good information, facts. My first guest tonight has just finished a mammoth undertaking, which is just made for our times right now. Cheryl Costa is a journalist, researcher, podcaster, columnist, a military veteran and security specialist, and more than anything, a cruncher of numbers. She's accumulated a massive pile of information dating back to 2001, maybe beyond, and has condensed it in what amounts to bite-sized pieces broken down by types of UFOs, shapes, colors, time of day they're seen, days of the week they're seen, by longitude, latitude, by city, city by city, county by county, state by state, so that anyone, anywhere can get hard numbers on what's been happening in the skies above where each of us lives. What cities had the most UFO sightings? What state? What kind are people seeing? What kind are they seeing, and are they interacting with us? Well, her newest project was just released. It's called The UFO Sightings Desk Reference 2001 to 2020 by Cheryl Costa and Linda Miller Costa. Cheryl, great to have you back here.
Hi, George.
This project, oh my gosh, it has to be like a labor of love. You must love what you're doing because this is a lot of work.
Yeah, it is a lot of work.
How long have you been working on this? I mean, you started your previous version of it, what came out years ago, but this particular one, when did you get going on it?
Okay, well, it actually started back during 2020. We were going to, about during the lockdown, we were going to do a set of shapes books, okay, just UFO shapes and analysis. And what happened was, one of the problems we had with the original database that we did our 2017 book with was that the people spelled the name of their cities wrong. In fact, 3.5% of people responding didn't even give us the city. Okay. And the problem was that when you tried to sort on the stuff with computer algorithms, if they were spelled in all caps or small case letters or misspelled or whatever, it wreaked havoc with the algorithms and automation we had written. It also messed up. We added county data to the 2017 book, okay, because it wasn't really done in the two national databases. So what we did was we developed an algorithm to install the county data, but with misspelled cities, sometimes we got that wrong. The automation got it wrong, and we didn't know. So back last July timeframe, we were realizing this was going to be a problem, and looking ahead to the 2020 book, we said, we got to fix this. So starting in first week of August, I started going through 148,000 records at that time, correcting the city spellings, probably about 1,500 lines at a time in the database. And while we were doing that, we were adding, we just said, hey, while we're at it, we're fixing the cities and the counties, we added latitude and longitude, and we added zip code. And it took 650 hours. We finished the first week of January. I averaged about, I averaged somewhere in the order of about 35 hours a week working on it. It was like going back and working a day job again.
That's a lot of coffee. That's a lot of coffee.
Awful lot of coffee.
I want to take the deep dive into the numbers here in a moment, because you and Karen have come up with a really great way to, Linda, I'm sorry, have come up with a great way to make it digestible. It's not just statistics. You put it into pieces that people can understand, and it relates to them where they live, wherever they live. But I want to ask you about some current events first, and then we'll jump into the book. So did you see the 60 Minutes piece tonight?
Absolutely.
You've been at this a long time. You were the ufologist of the year a couple years ago. Give me your take on it.
It was exactly the right. I know there's a lot of people out there in social media of the UFO community that are whining and complaining and pulling their hair out. As a journalist, that was the right segment for Ma and Pa America who know nothing about what we know. Okay, it was the right segment.
Totally agree. Yeah, totally agree.
A very, very informed way with smart people and without snickers and grins.
Did I just hear you say that the UFO people are whining and complaining on social media? Are you sure you're talking about the same audience that I know?
I just left a two-hour panel that was discussing this on Zoom. And there's a lot of people complaining about the fact that they didn't talk about this, they didn't talk about that. The UFO community always wants to drink from the fire hose.
Yeah.
And they wanted it for them. But we've got a lot of people, our neighbors and everybody. We've got to bring them up to speed to what we already know. And I think 60 Minutes did a wonderful job of doing that. It also goes back to the New Yorker had that article about a week ago, yeah. And it was like a 10-15 page article, and Linda read it to me, because I'm dyslexic, so I get burned out after a page or two, and she was reading it to me, and at one point she stopped, she says, this reads like a bunch of your articles, because it was a history of where this whole UFO story has been, and I thought the guy did a pretty good job with it. Again, this effort, we have to bring a lot of people up to speed very quickly. And 60 Minutes, they usually pull somewhere between 9 and 12 million people, viewers. That's a lot of people to bring up to speed on this topic matter, and boy, I would give anything to be a fly in the wall to listen to the water cooler talk tomorrow.
Yeah, and the water cooler talk within 60 minutes. Hey, let's look at those numbers. How did that go? Well, nobody embarrassed themselves. I will bet they get a spike in viewers, but even if they don't, I'm hoping that they're hooked. I want to ask you this. Now, so you've been a columnist for a long time. I don't know if you're still writing that column or not, but if this story had aired, what is that? What would the conversation be in the newsroom where you worked?
My newsroom was basically whatever you want to write, Cheryl. Okay, in the 7 years I was writing the New York Skies column, I only had one. This is rare.
I'll tell you what. Hold on, Cheryl. I should have waited to ask that question. We'll pick it up on the other side, talking with Cheryl Costa about UFO matters. And we're talking with Cheryl Costa, co-author of UFO Sightings Desk Reference 2001 to 2020. Just a huge undertaking, a great amount of data that couldn't be arrive at a more timely moment here, given the media environment. We are talking a little bit about UFO journalism here for our next couple of minutes with Cheryl. How editors and news managers around the country might change their view of the subject after seeing 60 Minutes dive right into the deep end of the pool. I know how journalism colleagues in my own town dealt with this over the years. I mean, for a long time after we started covering UFOs in these multi-part series in a big way, they looked at us like we were crazy. You guys are frittering away your credibility. You're going to crash and burn, not realizing how much the public is interested in this subject. It is an enduring interest. It's not a trend. It's not something that's going to go away in 6 months. You know, that was 30-plus years ago when we dove into it, and people are more interested than ever. It's hard to gauge it exactly, but I think 60 Minutes is about to find out, given the rating spike they'll likely see tomorrow. So longtime journalist Cheryl Costa has some thoughts on how the conversation in newsrooms might change. We'll get into that and then jump into her new statistics about UFO cases right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Cheryl, as we were discussing before the break, you worked for a unique news organization in that they appreciated the columns that you wrote about UFOs and related matters, and they recognized that the public ate it up. Not all news organizations have come to that realization yet. Do you imagine that there is a change in attitude tomorrow, at least in some of them, because of 60 Minutes taking it head on tonight?
You know, I would hope so. But, you know, I found that there was a strange reality back after the December 2017 revelations. Everybody thought, oh, wow, everybody's going to loosen up. And we reached out to a number of news organizations in upstate New York, okay, and offered to feed them material. And they left us off the phone. Hmm. And our people at the newspaper said, wow, we were offering them something really cool. You've got I had a national audience going on a little weekly paper out of upstate New York. You know, we did it on the online edition, and it was just stunning. Everybody thought the editors and news directors would loosen up, and they didn't. I'm hoping with 60 Minutes, and we've had with all these Navy revelations that have been coming out over the past year, we're seeing more and more, but for a long time, only people who were really putting them up were Fox. Well, I finally saw one today on CNN. You know, the Omaha one showed up on CNN today. So I'm very optimistic we're going to see some loosening up especially as we scream towards June and when we're supposed to get this government report.
I'm with you on that. I want to ask you about one other current event because it segues into discussion of your book, and that's about spheres. You mentioned about the USS Omaha, and I had talked about it at the top of the show, the story that Jeremy Corbell and I uncorked on Friday, video that's now gone all over the world. This really weird sphere travels right along with the USS Omaha for more than an hour. At one point, there were 14 of these things detected around the ship off and on for a couple of days, and then other ships in the same area were engulfed by other unknowns. So I wanted to ask you, based on this massive database you've accumulated, are people seeing spheres?
Oh, goodness, yes. Spheres are the number three of the 35 shapes that are tracked between the two databases, National UFO Reporting Center and MUFON. Spheres shake out to be the number three shape silhouette that is reported in the 20 years of the current book, 2001 to 2020, there were 17,113 sphere reports. And there were periods where there was more of them. We had a big slug of sightings back between about 2012 through about 2013-14 time frame. It was a peak, couple of peak years there. So during that period of time, there was like 1,600 to 2,000 a year of just the sphere. And they went down in sightings, you know, like a lot of UFO sightings did. But in 2020, they started screaming back, and last in 2020, we had 933 sphere reports for the United States, an average of about 50 to 70 a month, depending upon what month it was.
So, as I said, your data, all these hard facts, these numbers, just by themselves, it's interesting. But you break it down in bite-sized pieces and categories that make it so much more digestible and fun. It's what it is fun. You can go to your data and find out about spheres. Boom, like that. So if spheres are number three, what's number one and two in terms of shapes?
Okay, number one is just the proverbial light in the sky. Okay, and a lot of people, that's all they ever see. And that they had like a 21,000 worth over the 20 years, and it's a dominant one. The second most common shape is the circle, or circle of lights. Okay, that's a very common one. And like I said, spheres are a significant one. I've actually been tracking spheres for a couple of years. I wrote quite a few articles about them because they're unique. It was the first thing I ever saw when I was 12 years old was a sphere.
And that's right. You had a sighting when you were young.
Yeah.
So I would, before we leave the spheres, you saw the Omaha, USS Omaha video. Do you have a take on it? I know we should all be cautious about this. The Navy says this is unknown. We don't know what it is. If it was a balloon, as some have suggested, I think they could figure that out. It didn't act like a balloon. It didn't act like any drone that we know of. It's not one of ours. That's for sure. Because we know that because the UAP task force has been educating their higher ups, the Joint Chiefs, telling them these are unknown. We don't know what they are. I don't think that they would lie to their bosses, but that's my take on it. What's your take?
No, they wouldn't lie to their bosses. There's been a problem for years, for almost 20 years. And I suppose maybe even goes back to 1968-69 time frame when Dr. Condon gave that report to Congress, and everything just kind of sort of got shut off. Nobody was going to look at them. News directors weren't going to report them. The government wasn't going to spend any money on it, that type of thing. And by the way, the rest of us who studied that stuff, we were just labeled true believers and crackpots. And that was the bad part of it. So here we are. We come up here. We're in the 21st century. Navy's being buzzed by this stuff. And talking to guys like Lou Alessandro and such, you know, none of the intelligence agencies were taking them seriously or wanted to touch it because of the stigma. And if this had been a Chinese plane or a Russian plane that nobody had ever seen, the intelligence agencies that are associated with the DOD would have been all over it to research it and gather data. But this, they were blowing it off. And that was a shame. And, you know, with this whole thing with the Department of Defense Inspector General getting involved here recently, I think that's totally appropriate because somewhere there was a systemic dereliction of duty, that something wasn't being looked at because everybody thought it was stupid, you know, or fictitious or imaginary. And there's some systemic problems there, that the fact that the intelligence analysis community were not involved as these Navy pilots began reporting this stuff, 10, 15, 20 years ago. So I'm very happy that Navy intelligence took the plate and said, we'll do it. That really speaks well for them. And that's where it's going. And I think the IG is going to the Department of Defense Inspector General is going to really get to the bottom of some things. I remember when I interviewed Lou Alessandro, he told me he kept having trouble trying to get stuff up to Secretary Mattis. It was stopping in middle-level management, okay? Again, there's a problem with the chain of command forwarding material up a lot. In the corporate world, we used to call it the boss doesn't like bad news, and people in between you and the boss are going to filter it. And that's what it amounted to. And I think the IG is going to get to the bottom of it, and I think it's a good thing.
I do, too. I mean, you know, somewhere, in addition to the communication problem, somewhere there's a storehouse of information. There are stovepipes of information where some people know a whole lot more than everyone else, information that they did not share with the military and intelligence colleagues. And, you know, it's not that everybody has to know everything, but some of the people at the top sure should have known some of this stuff. And USS Omaha, that incident was pretty weird. It didn't, whatever the sphere was, didn't attack the ship. But it played games with them. It was doing surveillance of its own. And even though it wasn't hostile, the fact that it was there at all is unsettling.
Well, you know, the thing is, even in the 60 Minutes piece tonight, they were talking like it's a relatively recent phenomena. And they're afraid maybe one of these, the way they verbalize it, that you know, Russia or China may have leapfrogged us in technology by a generation of aerospace technology. Look, the UFOs have been flying circles around our aircraft for over 70 years. It's nothing new. There's a quote from President Harry Truman saying, I can tell you with confidence that these things were not manufactured on Earth. You know,
I'm with you. Back to your UFO sightings desk reference. How many cases do we have in here? How many do we have?
100. Okay, so you know. Remember I said in January I finished doing the city spellings, that type of thing?
Yeah.
We put another 750 hours in doing this book, okay, this particular book. So we had a total 1,400 hours making this book. We have 167,632 reports from the combined from the two databases.
So the database is being MUFON and the UFO Reporting Center?
Reporting Center, yes.
All right. So you're not out there saying this one's real, this one isn't. You're taking the cases, taking sort of at face value, and looking for patterns.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people kind of rag on Linda and myself. Oh, you didn't vet them all. Or, you know, what are your best your 25 top cases? I don't have top cases. I have 167,632 eyewitness reports. And an eyewitness report can still get you convicted in any court in this country.
Let's do some broad strokes on this then. Sure. You know, 2020, I think a lot of people were wondering, with people at home, not working, they're taking, you know, they're reintroducing themselves to spouses. They're taking long walks at night. They're outside smoking cigarettes. They're having wild booze parties in the hot tub. Whatever they're doing, they have a lot more time on their hands to look at the sky. So would that affect the numbers? What did you come up with?
Well, okay, a couple of things that drive UFO sightings: population and temperate weather, and leisure time is one of them. Now, leisure time in the context of when people, we realize, reading a lot of reports, it would say, hey, I was working second shift at the plant, and I went out for a smoke. Okay, there's leisure time. I was out walking the dog. Walking the dog and having a smoke. In fact, smokers, MUFON investigators, when they search through a month's worth of sightings, they search for dog and smoke because they're considered relatively stable and reliable observers because they're out all the time. But leisure time was a big driver. So when we started going into lockdown, a lot of fans contacted me and said, well, if leisure time is a driver, we're going into this lockdown March-April timeframe in 2020, we should see a spike in sightings. And by golly, we did. A huge amount of sighting input there. So, and it followed the same time patterns, you know, most of it after 5 o'clock at night up to about 11:30 at night, which is where about 60 to 70% of the sightings are in a day's hours.
So other broad strokes of what the data shows. So you said 2020 makes a big jump. From 2019 or from years ago? Is there a tick that's a trend over the last couple of years?
Okay. Yeah, well, remember we were going down, and the sightings were falling off rather steep from about 2013-2014 time frame. It was falling off steep, and it bottomed out in 2017. Okay, I got all kinds of mail. Everybody was saying Space Force chasing them away or whatever. You know, all kinds of ridiculous stuff. Oh, they're sick of looking at us. You know, the best one I ever heard was they ran out of grant money and they had to go home. You know, I also, when I completed that year privately, you know, I was keeping track with the database and I was adding stuff, and I noticed there was a slight uptick. Now, I was telling people that there's a 6 to 8 year cycle with this stuff, and I expected this to fall off like this, and I was expecting it to start ticking up, and it did. In 2018, there was a slight uptick with MUFON, and 2019, the numbers were coming up, and 2020, you had called me up and said, hey, take a look at this. I'm getting, my phone's ringing off the hook. So we did, and when we did a first look at monthly totals just on National UFO Reporting Center compared to previous years, it was the best year since 2014 and 2012. So we said, wow, those were peak years. You know, how's this going to shake out? And it ended up shaking out like about like 2013 from a total. But I think the pandemic also affected, I think as the we all went into this sense of lethargy. There's a French word, ennui, you know, where we just kind of, you know. And I think a lot of people weren't out as much. They weren't reporting things. I think that might be part of it as well. But the bottom is, 2020 was a bang-up year for sightings.
So you break it down by types of UFOs. We mentioned about lights in the sky, circles, and spheres. What are the other types? Any on the list, say top 10 or top 20, that jump out at you that are different from years past?
Well, there's an unknown category, which is about number 4. It's actually called unknown. Triangles, fireballs, disc, star-like, oval, cigar, cylinder, that type of thing. Those are the ones, the big heavy hitters for numbers. And we have a problem in this country with everything has to be a mega winner and a top number, that type of thing.
Right.
We found also in the intervening years since the 2017 book, too, before we started working on this series, we discovered that there was some really exotic stuff hiding in the small numbers. Okay, when the Saturn shape shows up, that's that one like the Japan Airlines freighter ran into experienced back in 1986. That thing was a half a mile wide. Whenever that kind of show, there are only about 30 or 40 of them sightings a year, but whenever they show up, the teardrop and the egg shape show up. In higher numbers, like you would expect, that those other two shapes, the teardrop and the egg shape, were perhaps support craft of some sort.
We're talking with Cheryl Costa about her massive new work, UFO Sightings Desk Reference 01 to 2020. A lot of great data still to come. We're going to get into some categories and places where you live, how you rank, and what kind of things are being seen in the skies where you are. We'll open up the phone lines in a bit as well.